Coming up, where will the Obamas go to church when they move to Washington? We look at some of the options. And the man whose feeding program this year sent 40 million meals to hungry children at a cost of just 13 cents each. Plus, the popular charitable catalogs, buying goats and other animals to help poor families take care of themselves.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics Newsweekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're yourretirementcompany.com. Also by the Henry Luce Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. There's been a major shakeup in the world of Protestant evangelicals. Richard Cizik resigned as the principal lobbyist and spokesman for the National Association of Evangelicals. Cizik has long been a leader of the movement among some evangelicals, especially younger ones, to broaden their top public concerns. But earlier this month, in an interview with NPR, Cizik expressed support for civil unions, which went beyond the official NAE position. There were complaints from other evangelicals, and the president of the NAE, Leith Anderson, said he and Cizik had reluctantly agreed that Cizik should step down. In other news, nearly 3 million Muslims have completed the Hajj, the annual religious pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, which this year was peaceful and accident-free. The Islamic faithful around the world marked the conclusion of the mass pilgrimage with the celebratory holiday Eid al-Adha. President-elect Barack Obama this week said one of the main goals of his administration will be repairing U.S. relations with the Islamic world. He said he hopes to deliver a major speech from a Muslim capital. Meanwhile, humanitarian and religious groups continue offering Obama advice about their priorities. A genocide prevention task force called for the creation of a $250 million fund to help stop mass killings in places like Darfur and Congo. And a prominent coalition of interfaith leaders urged Obama to take a leadership role in working for peace in the Holy Land. In Washington, speculation is running high about where Obama and his family will attend church after they move into the White House. Earlier this year, Obama cut ties with his longtime Chicago congregation, Trinity United Church of Christ, because of its controversial former pastor, Jeremiah Wright. Kim Lawton takes a look at some of the Washington churches Obama may want to consider.
If the Obamas want to go with an establishment mainline congregation, they may want to consider National Presbyterian Church. It's regularly attended by cabinet officials, members of Congress, and Supreme Court justices. Congregational archives claim that most presidents since James Madison have visited the church at least one time. National Pres, as it's called, has about 2,500 members. And note to Obama daughters Sasha and Malia, there's an active children's program with about 400 kids. National Pres has a special Chapel of the Presidents dedicated to Dwight D. Eisenhower. Ike was the last president to make this his church home. He was actually baptized here while he was president. National Pres may say that most presidents have visited, but St. John's Episcopal makes the claim that every president since Madison has come here at least once.
St. John's Episcopal Church has a great location. If you're at the White House, all you have to do is walk across Lafayette Park and you're here. No excuses for being late.
The church was founded in 1815 specifically to offer presidents a place to worship. The historic national landmark is now undergoing its first major renovation in more than 100 years. The sanctuary was literally gutted and everything is being refurbished and upgraded from the floors to the electrical systems. Rector Luis Leon says St. John's has a lot to offer a president. In addition to the location, he says the congregation is used to all the Secret Service and its elaborate security measures. And there's even a special presidential pew.
Right about here is where pew 54, which is called the president's pew, will be once we finish the renovations to the church.
It's the spot first selected by President Madison.
He didn't want the front pew, which would be the most prominent pew. He wanted one that was in the middle of the church so that he would be treated as every other parishioner would be treated here at St. John's Church. And that's a standard we've tried to maintain over the years.
So what if a president doesn't want to sit in that pew?
He can sit wherever he wants to sit.
Leon says the church tries to meet the spiritual needs of a congregation made up of people from all over the metropolitan area, from the powerful to the homeless.
And everybody checks their political partisan membership at the door, and we get along very well because of that.
And after the controversy generated by the fiery sermons of Jeremiah Wright, Obama may be relieved to learn that Leon has a very different preaching style.
The one thing we've grown accustomed and we're very careful about is, because we never know who's in the congregation, is that we try not to scold anybody.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt and several presidents after him held pre-inaugural prayer services at St. John's. Leon says they'll be ready should Obama choose to do so as well.
Our contractors have assured us that the renovations will be completed by the first part of January.
If Obama wants to be part of one of the most historic churches in the African-American tradition, he may want to consider Metropolitan African Methodist Episcopal Church. The AME was founded in 1816 by a former slave, Richard Allen, and it's America's first independent black denomination. Metropolitan has a long history of social activism. It was a stop on the Underground Railroad, and Frederick Douglass preached from the pulpit here. Today, it continues to be a center of progressive religious causes. We know Obama likes good church music, so he may want to base his decision on that. If so, there's the Southern Baptist Church Praise and Worship Center, which, by the way, is not affiliated with the Southern Baptist Convention. Earlier this year, Southern Church won the Verizon Wireless competition for the best small church choir in the D.C. region. Co-pastors Charles and Eleanor Doom say they strive for the kind of church music that touches everyone. It's all part of the church's exuberant worship style.
And we don't just sit. We're not quiet. Mm-hmm. We give our physical expressions, and we do what the psalmist says. We make a joyful noise unto the Lord.
We genuinely love God, and we appreciate what God has done for us.
There's a closeness here, a feeling of family.
We use these terms in the church, brother and sister. And those are kindred terms. Those are family terms. We are very oriented in terms of family. We believe that strong families make strong churches.
Pastor Doom often preaches a vigorous sermon.
I try to preach something that will meet the needs of the people where they are.
Are they long sermons?
I've been guilty of that, yes. I tell people I'm not a helicopter type preacher, you know. A helicopter goes straight up. I'm more like a 747. It takes me time to go down the runway, gets clearance, and then take off.
An added bonus, there are lots of church dinners, and Southern boasts that it has many great cooks.
We have various services where food is involved. You know, church people love to eat. So we fellowship around food. Amen.
Obama may want to attend New York Avenue Presbyterian, the church of one of his presidential heroes, Abraham Lincoln. Some presidents have based their church decision on denominational ties. Jimmy Carter chose First Baptist, where he sometimes taught Sunday school classes. The Clintons regularly attended Foundry United Methodist, the denomination Hillary grew up in. Obama was a member of the United Church of Christ for more than 20 years. There are 8 UCC churches in Washington, including Plymouth UCC, which describes itself as a church striving to connect people to God, people to people, and people to great causes. Then again, National City Christian Church might fit several qualifications. It's part of a sister denomination to the UCC. It's close to the White House. It's historic. And it also has several presidential ties. Reverend Stephen Gentle is senior pastor.
National City Christian Church is an exciting place to worship and to come and grow spiritually. It's a multicultural multiracial, bilingual congregation that seeks to be welcoming to all people.
Gentle says with his sermons, he tries to engage both the heart and the mind.
You preach a long sermon?
That's a relative question. No, they could be longer.
National City Christian has a variety of musical styles, from a gospel choir to classical musicians who also perform at weekday noon concerts at the church. Two presidents have made this their church home, James Garfield and Lyndon B. Johnson. Both are immortalized in stained glass windows in the sanctuary. Garfield was the only ordained minister to be U.S. president, and he was highly involved there until his assassination in 1881.
President Garfield, James Garfield, was not only an active participant in our congregation, but when he was in worship, would often be asked to preside at the Lord's table, our communion service, or sometimes even to preach.
LBJ and Lady Bird were also active here.
I'm told that often they would go down for coffee at our social time, and they would spend as much time as they would like, just greeting and visiting and taking photos with members of our church and other guests.
LBJ's window has symbols that depict some of the highlights of his presidency: the establishment of Medicare, space advances at NASA, and of course, racial reconciliation and the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. There's a special presidential pew here, too, deemed by LBJ's Secret Service team to be the safest place in the church. It's right near an exit. The deacons always brought communion here to the president first.
And I've been told the reason they wanted the president and his family to be served first is that so no one could tamper with the communion and that they would be safe.
Gentle says while they have a special spot reserved for the president, they are flexible.
But of course, we'd be delighted to find just the right pew for the Obama family, should they ever like to worship here.
Whatever congregation the Obamas choose will have to make numerous accommodations, from security to the inevitable national scrutiny. But as one religious leader told us, the most important consideration for Obama will be finding a place that will nurture his soul. I'm Kim Lawton in Washington.
Now, Kids Against Hunger. This past week, the UN said nearly a billion people worldwide are hungry. But there are many efforts underway to combat that. We have a Fred DeSam Lazaro story today about one popular feeding program that this year shipped out 40 million meals for poor children around the world at just 13 cents a meal. Church volunteers, a nutritious recipe, and one dedicated man made it all possible.
Each weekday morning at this missionary school in rural Haiti, the gates open to a stampede of small, mostly bare feet. The kids make it to the dining hall for what will likely be their only substantial meal of the day. A few quietly save a portion, usually for a younger sibling who could not get here. Any child from the area is welcome. Occasionally, an adult like Emma Marysu is invited in. She'd come to the clinic next door with two-year-old twins, their bodies swollen and emaciated by severe malnourishment. Another occasional visitor at these mealtimes is a 79-year-old social entrepreneur from Minnesota. Richard Proudfit created this feeding program called Kids Against Hunger. It will deliver 40 million meals this year, and he hopes 80 million next year in 38 countries around the world. The ABC of good learning is a good meal, he says.
God has called me to do feed starving children. I have to do that first, and then when we activate their body, then they can move on to other things.
His calling came long before he retired from a successful business career, long before a stroke that distorts his speech but not his enthusiasm, especially when it comes to nutrition in the meals here.
It's unbelievable. 52% protein, rice, six vegetables designed for the children. And also we put in 21 vitamins and minerals in that designed for their children.
Say rise.
It's the design of his program that's been key to its growing success.
I'm Don Dresser, and I'm the director of outreach here.
It begins in places like Calvary Lutheran Church in suburban Minneapolis, where people gather for so-called packaging events.
Do we have any kids in here that are under second grade? If we do, we need them to go over to child care.
Second grade is all that's required to volunteer.
We started out with a goal of 500,000 meals. We've bypassed that, and our new goal is 1,000,000 meals. So, and because we're doing 1,000,000 meals, it also had changed the price per meal. So we're down to 13 cents a meal.
First thing we're going to do is put in some of the vegetable. Put a full scoop of this in there. That you want to level off. That's why we got two spoons in that one. Yes, perfect. The rice waits last.
All right. Full keeping like spoon that? On that. No more.
Not, yeah. Like this?
Yep, you got it.
An assembly line rhythm quickly sets in, methodically mixing, measuring, sealing, and packaging meals in small bags and cartons. It is church basement, not warehouse scale, designed for volunteers. Many combine social and charitable urges and get a tangible sense of helping distant children.
It's because I can just see those kids, well, my kids and those kids. Makes me sad.
Something very simple that does a whole lot of good. It shows the importance of working together and doing something good for more than just yourself.
Like the packaging, funding is small scale, contributions from the volunteers and church community. They doubled an earlier goal, and the pastor is confident they'll raise the $130,000 for 1,000,000 meals.
I've been here almost 12 years, and I don't remember us doing anything that is so excited this number of people to be a part of it and to feel like we're really making a difference in the world.
One, two, three, bang.
Richard Proudfit began working on kids' nutrition in 1974, moved by suffering he saw as a volunteer in Honduras after Hurricane Fifi.
The children, they were literally dying all around me, and the mother was carrying, and they were dying right in their arms. And I says, I have to come back to Minnesota and say, what can I do with it?
He launched feeding programs soon after selling his plastics businesses in the 1980s. At first, he just bought wholesale quantities of things typically found on American grocery shelves, like Twinkies and granola.
I took 15 tons of food to India, and my kids were throwing up at me because it was too powerful. They were coming from zero way up. So when I met with Cargill's, they said, calm it down, and it will accept the children or all the world.
So finding the right diet took a lot of trial and error.
Oh, it took
then?
3 years. 3 years.
3 years working with food companies to hit a formula that satisfies the varying nutritional and religious needs across the world. No beef or pork, for example. It's dehydrated for long shelf life. Just add boiling water as you'd prepare rice, the world's most common staple.
I met with other companies, and I says, what do we need in India? They need vitamin A. I went to Philippines. They need magnesium, calcium, and coppers. And then I went to Honduras. They need folic acid. I says, wait a minute. I can't have a menu of every country. I said, throw it all in.
The idea has caught on. Today, Kids Against Hunger has 30 satellite locations in 18 states, from church groups to Kiwanis clubs. They've attracted some 80,000 volunteers. Michael Lloyd, who now runs its day-to-day affairs, says Kids Against Hunger's role is as logistical link between good intentions here and hungry children there.
We provide them all the support, how much ingredients to order, for how many meals they want to package, what equipment they need, and so on. So we help them distribute the food also. We have connections in over 40 countries, and if they're looking for an outlet for their food, an NGO to distribute it through, we try to help them with that service as well.
They've also established connections to the U.S. military, so international shipping costs, often a major expense, are minimized. On this day, the Coast Guard vessel Tampa, on patrol in the Caribbean, delivered a load in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince. These meals were destined for the feeding program Emma Marisu brought her twins to before visiting the doctor.
Okay.
At age two, each child barely weighs 20 pounds, about half the normal range. It will take weeks to restore them to full health with a nutritious diet, something that still eludes most Haitian children. But children who receive the Kids Against Hunger meals, like three-year-old Geraldine, do thrive. Adam and Amber White run the church feeding program.
Within 10 days, she's gained 5 pounds in weight, and she's, I mean, as you can tell, she's still malnourished, but, I mean, a few days ago, she didn't have a smile on her face, and now she does.
The smile, like progress against malnutrition in Haiti, is slow to come. But that doesn't dampen Richard Proudfit's optimism that he'll soon reach every hungry child, optimism expressed with biblical zeal.
It's my passion of going to my Nineveh, okay? I have to go there. Because if I don't, I'm going to wind up in the belly of a fish. I love God's for, because every children in the world is God's children.
Next year, Kids Against Hunger expects to double the number of meals it will package, and Richard Proudfit expects to deliver a fair share of these himself.
We're going to deliver the food right to the homes.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred DeSamlazaro, just outside Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
Cardinal Avery Dulles has died. The Roman Catholic scholar and educator was the first American Jesuit to be named a cardinal. He was 90 years old. And we remember this week William Plaker, another of the country's most respected theologians. Plaker taught for many years at Wabash College in Indiana and was a prolific writer. He was 60 years old. On our calendar, Roman Catholics, especially Hispanic Catholics, celebrated the feast day of the Virgin of Guadalupe on Friday. The holiday commemorates the Virgin Mary's appearance to a Mexican peasant in 1531. And in Jerusalem, a beloved annual custom, throughout the year, postal workers there receive letters addressed to God from people of many faiths all over the world. Those letters are held, and at this time every year, workers tuck them into the Western Wall. Jewish tradition holds that prayers left in the wall will be answered by God. The Christian relief organization World Vision commissioned a survey recently which found that because of the recession, 71% of Americans say they will spend less money on holiday presents this year. And nearly half say they are more likely to make a charitable gift. One kind of charitable giving works like this. You look at a catalog from Heifer International or World Vision or Oxfam America or some other group that helps the world's poor become more self-reliant. Usually what's offered are animals. So say you give $25 for two chickens. The charity uses the money and sends you a card you can send to someone on your list saying, I bought two chickens, or whatever, in your name. The most popular item, by far, is a goat at $75. Even Heifer International says goats are its number one item. All that milk and kids, too. Heifers, young cows, go for $500, and you can buy a share of one for $50. World Vision says water wells are its number two most popular item after goats. You can buy a share of a deep well for $150. A fish pond is $200 and a fishing kit $40. And the gifts are not all related to food. Sewing machines are big and so are school supplies at $25 per classroom. For schools, corporate gifts more than match your own. So a $50 donation can bring $700 worth of books and paper and caps and gowns. Also, to help build good soil out of hard-packed dirt, Oxfam America and other groups offer a can of worms, 1 pound for $18. In their gift catalogs, the charity groups acknowledge that they don't exactly deliver a heifer or pig for every request for one. The happy pictures are just symbolic, they say. Every gift does go to help the very poor, but what it buys depends on what's most needed at the time. You could order a goat and get part of a water buffalo, and you'd never know. But don't despair. These charity organizations have good reputations for efficiency and results. And remember, however your donation ends up, every gift is tax deductible. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. There's much more on our website, including coverage of religion and politics on our One Nation page. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more from the award-winning choir at Southern Baptist Church Praise and Worship Center in Washington.